welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Click, click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for a discounted rate. Al, so much good stuff has happened in the NBA, so please tell me all about it.
Well, Andrew, it all started last Friday night when the Knicks continued what has been one of their hottest streaks in recent franchise history, beating the Heat in Miami 122-120. The game came down to the final shot. Julius Randle, who scored 43 in the game, almost lost the ball, but recovered and hit a three while falling sideways out of bounds with only 0.7 seconds remaining on the clock. It was the Knicks' eighth straight win, and they would make it nine after beating the Celtics in Boston in double overtime just 2 days later. Now, the streak eventually did end at nine, but that was the eighth longest winning streak in New York Knicks franchise history. The run has helped New York escape the play-in for the time being, sitting in fifth and 3.5 games up on the seventh-seeded Heat. Also on Friday, some stuff happened in Memphis, which we will get to later. On Saturday, it was the Sixers' best win of the season. The Sixers traveled to Milwaukee to face a Bucks team that had won 16 games in a row. Despite being down 18 with 3 minutes left in the third quarter, Philly had cut it to one by the 9-minute mark of the fourth. Down the stretch, it was a lot of James Harden, who finished the game with a stat line of 38, 9, and 10. But the biggest shot of the game was from Joel Embiid, who hit a go-ahead three from the top of the key with 42 seconds left. Now, after a couple frustrating losses for the Sixers last week, they have now won 3 in a row and 9 of their last 12. They remain solidly in third in the East, 2.5 games ahead of the Cavs in fourth. On Sunday, Andrew, we got a marquee matchup between the Suns and Mavs in Dallas. KD and Devin Booker combined for 73 of the Suns' 130 points en route to a 4-point win over the Mavs. KD was brilliant in the game, scoring his 37 points on only 17 shots, which included the go-ahead shot with 12 seconds left, a classic KD mid-range jumper over the defense. For the Mavericks, they continue to look for consistency, especially on the defensive end, as they fall to only 3-7 in their last 10 games. That stretch has dropped them to 34-33, eighth in the West, and a game and a half up on the Lakers. The Mavs now enter a stretch with 9 of their next 12 games on the road, and possibly without Luka for a few after he injured his thigh later in the week. Yikes. On Monday, the Boston Celtics continued their late season trend of losing incredibly close games.
So painful.
After losing to the Knicks in double overtime on Sunday, which I mentioned, they lost in overtime to the Cavs on the second night of a back-to-back. 4 of Boston's last 10 games have gone to overtime, and one of the games that didn't in that stretch was the game against Philly when Embiid's final heave to tie it up was a split second late. In this game, the Celtics had a chance to end it in regulation when Grant Williams stepped to the line with the game tied at 109 and 0.8 seconds left. Cameras caught Donovan Mitchell and Williams jawing at each other, and you could see Williams say to Mitchell, "I'm going to make both." Hopefully he wasn't referring to the free throws he was about to shoot, because he missed both, which allowed Donovan Mitchell, who scored 40 in the game, to get the win in overtime. On Tuesday, the Lakers got a much-needed win without LeBron, beating the Grizzlies at home 112-103. Things were looking a little bleak for the Lakers when it was announced LeBron would miss at least the next 3 weeks after injuring his foot in a game against the Mavs. But in the 5 games since, the Lakers have gone a respectable 3-2, led by Anthony Davis, who is averaging 34 points and 13.5 rebounds per game since LeBron's injury. While 3-2 might not sound that exciting, it's been enough to get the Lakers up to the 9th spot in the West with 16 games remaining. And those 16 games, it's a pretty favorable schedule the rest of the way. 9 of those 16 are at home, and 2 of the 7 road games are in Houston. On Wednesday, it was Kevin Durant's home debut for the Phoenix Suns. While the game ended in a 31-point blowout win for the Suns over the Thunder, it was not because of KD. Unfortunately, Durant slipped and twisted his ankle during the pregame warm-up. He was ruled out of the game and will be ruled out for several more, as he is not expected to be reevaluated for 2 weeks. The Suns continue their climb up the standings, however, having won 4 in a row, but this next stretch without KD could be a bit challenging. Next three games are against the Kings, the Warriors on the road, and the Milwaukee Bucks. Yikes. And finally, on Thursday, we got another classic Kings home game, this time against the previously streaking Knicks. The Kings are completely unable to play boring basketball games, and this was no different. It came down to the final minute with no play bigger than a De'Aaron Fox driving layup where he blew by Josh Hart and met Isaiah Hartenstein at the rim, giving the Kings a four-point lead with 26 seconds to go. Fox finished with 23-7, while Domantas Sabonis posted a 24-point triple-double. The Kings have won 10 of 13 and are now the number two seed in the West. What a week it was, Andrew.
What a week, indeed. The season is wrapping up, and I thought I would dig into some shooting stats as we kind of close this season down a little bit. And here are five shooting stats that you may or may not know. Number one, did you know that DeAndre Ayton is the best finisher at the rim in the NBA this year?
Really? What's he shooting?
Of players taking at least five shots in the restricted area, Ayton is the best, shooting 78.7% in the restricted area this season.
Wow.
That's just insane. The worst shooting at least five or more is Jalen Green, who is 54% in the restricted area this year. Now, it's hard to judge between Ayton and Green. It's a guard and it's a big. So let's compare him to other guards. John Morant, 60%. SGA, 63%. Anthony Edwards, 63%. Tatum and Brown are both shooting a very nice 69%. Jimmy Butler, 65%. Damian Lillard, 64%. Josh Giddey, 63%. Zach LaVine, 66%. Even Russell Westbrook is 58% in the restricted area. So 54%.
Really? Hmm.
Kind of a big yikes there for Jalen Green. Stat number two. Did you know that Al Horford is the best corner three-point shooter in the NBA this year?
Honestly, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I didn't know it, but it doesn't surprise.
Hey, 15 players in the league are shooting two or more corner threes per game, and Horford is the best, shooting 49% from the corners this season. It's pretty amazing. The worst, a former Celtic, a current Hornet, Terry Rozier is only shooting 30% from the corners and taking two or more per game. Pretty bad. Pretty bad. Next, the mid-range. We all know that Kevin Durant is the mid-range maestro. That's no secret at all. Get well soon, Kevin. But he is so far ahead of the pack with his efficiency in the mid-range. He's shooting 57.5% in the mid-range this season. It's absolutely breathtaking watching him just get to those pull-ups. Of the players taking three or more shots in the mid-range per game, and Kevin's taking seven, by the way, the closest percentage is his own teammate, Devin Booker, who's shooting 48%. That's 9 percentage points better. That's like a galaxy apart in efficiency.
That is wild.
The worst mid-range shooter in the NBA, you know who it is? That's shooting at least three mid-range jumpers per game?
I don't know.
Giannis.
Is it Dylan Brooks?
No, it's not Dylan Brooks. No. Poor Dylan Brooks. We don't need to pile on them. We don't need to pile on the Grizzlies during the segment. Giannis Antetokounmpo is taking 30. He's taking three or more, and he's shooting 36%. Kevin Durant is shooting 21% better in the mid-range than Giannis.
Wow.
That's roughly two galaxies apart.
Two galaxies.
In efficiency.
Wow.
It's insane. Wild. Get well soon, Kevin. We need Kevin more Kevin Durant in the NBA. What about catch and shoot, Al? Who's the best catch and shoot guy in the league?
It's got to be my guy, Isaiah Joe.
It is not Isaiah Joe.
Oh, okay.
It is Michael Porter Jr.
Ooh.
Of the players taking at least five catch and shoot threes, there are 30 of those guys taking at least five catch and shoot shots per game. He's shooting 46% on catch and shoots this season.
Damn.
Which is just wild. The worst, another junior. Kelly Oubre Jr., who's shooting 30.
Oh, Tsunami Poppy.
Tsunami Poppy shooting 32% on catch and shoot shots this season. And that's of players taking five or more. Pretty brutal and pretty impressive stuff from MPJ, who I don't feel like has gotten a ton of coverage this year from a lot of people, but is having an outstanding season and is one of the big reasons why they're having so much success. And he provides so much spacing. He's been unbelievable. Okay, last one. What about a pull-up, Jay? What about a little Jimbo here? Let's separate these into twos and threes. So from two, it's easily Kevin Durant, right?
Kevin Durant, yeah.
he's great. Once he gets to that pull-up around the free throw line, it's money. He's shooting 60% on pull-up twos. 60%. The worst pull-up shooter in the league that's taking at least four pull-ups per game. There's two guys. It's Tyler Hero and Paolo Banchero are both shooting 39% on their pull-up Js from two. That's 21% less than Kevin Durant. Get well soon, KD. I just can't get over some of these stats from Kevin. They're just unbelievable. And then
I have a guess for three.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
So you're saying the best pull up shooter
best
from three.
Best pull up from three. Yeah. Best pull up J from three.
It's gotta be Dame. Is it Dame?
Oh no. Oh, oh no. 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 Don't think as hard. Don't think too hard.
Don't think too hard. It's got to be my guy, Isaiah Joe.
No, Al. No. Now you're just thinking way too hard. It's Steph Curry.
Oh, but yeah. Okay. All right.
The thing about Steph is that his greatness is on full display this season. He's shooting 47.7% on pull-up threes.
Wow.
That is wild. So the next best player in pull-up threes, taking four or more pull-up threes. That's where I made the cutoff. It's like, okay, you're taking quite a bit. Like, you're taking a lot of pull-up threes. The next best is Tyrese Haliburton, who's shooting 40% on pull-up threes.
Wow, that's super impressive.
That's 7.7% better than the next best. I mean, this is a gulf. This is the Grand Canyon, like, away from each other. It is insane. Okay, the worst pull-up shooter taking at least four pull-up threes or more in the NBA this year is Boston's own Jason Tatum, who's shooting 29% on pull-up threes this season. That's a big yikes. And listen, just the fact, I think that we overlook Steph so much as just like how great he can be. But like that number to me, that blew me away. This, you know, whenever I looked it up, it just absolutely blew me away that Steph is just still that much better and that much further ahead than everybody else. I mean, he truly is the greatest shooter ever and is having a crazy season.
Well, and that's a great lead in to what I'm going to talk about, which I'll eventually get to, because the Warriors have been one of the more bizarre teams this season because of things like that. Like Steph is having arguably a career year this year, and they just haven't been able to figure it out. But I want to start by talking about the Kings, because the Kings are good, Andrew. Every game is fun. They've taken the challenge of making the playoffs for the first time in 16 years and turned it into the most entertaining show in the league. The drama with this team isn't even about whether they will make the playoffs or not at this point. The drama is the games themselves, which are some of the best television I've watched this year. And so with the playoffs now a reality, it's hard not to start thinking ahead with this team. Like, I'm staring at these standings each night this week, and you start to realize there's a very realistic scenario where the Kings could avoid both the Suns and the Nuggets until the conference finals. And you factor in what's going on in Memphis, and all of a sudden, the fun Kings story could end up being something a lot bigger. So I'm thinking about this scenario. I'm thinking, okay, there's a reasonable chance they could avoid the Suns. They could avoid the Nuggets. Maybe they avoid the Warriors. That was the third team I thought of. I'm thinking, okay, it'd probably be nice to avoid the Warriors. But let's talk about the Golden State Warriors, and specifically the Golden State Warriors on the road, where they transform into one of the more bizarre teams to watch this season. I watched two Warriors road games this week, a loss in OKC and a loss in Memphis. Those were the seventh and eighth straight losses for the Warriors on the road. The Warriors have not won a road game in 38 days. They are 7-26 on the road, which is tied with the Detroit Pistons for the third fewest road wins this season. Again, on the road, the Warriors have the same record as a team that currently has 15 total wins. Now, you can make some excuses. Steph just recently came back from an extended absence. Andrew Wiggins has missed the last 9 games for personal reasons. GP2 is out. They can't play two-way player Anthony Lamb because he's reached his 50-game limit, which means they have to convert him to a full contract, which they can't do until March 13th because they don't currently have an open roster spot. And if you're wondering, wow, has it really gotten to the point where the defending champions sort of need two-way player Anthony Lamb? Yeah, kind of. It kind of has gotten to that point. Even with those excuses, even in games where Steph Curry has played, the guy averaging 36-6 on 50-40-90 shooting, the Warriors are still only 5-16 on the road in games in which Steph played. Wow. Now, I've been following the Warriors' road struggles throughout the season, but as the road record continues to get worse and we get closer to the playoffs, it's gotten to the point where it's moved beyond like a funny little quirk of the season. Now I'm staring at this road record wondering, has any playoff team ever been this bad on the road? To answer that question, Andrew, I went back through every team that made the playoffs in the last two decades, 160 teams in total. I looked at their road record to figure out, one, have teams with really bad road records made the playoffs before? And two, how did they do once they got there? Now, I chose 16 road wins as a cutoff. That's going 16-25 on the road in an 82-game season, winning fewer than 40% of your road games. So, for example, there have been 18 teams to win the equivalent of 16 road games over the past two decades. Of those 18 teams, once they got to the playoffs, 11 were knocked out in round one, 5 were knocked out in round two. One, the 2021 Atlanta Hawks, made it all the way to the conference finals. And one more, the 2003 Nets made it all the way to the finals. The 2003 Nets were the second seed in the East, and their road record was 16-25. Wow. So all in all, going 16-25 on the road isn't a complete death knell for your team's postseason chances. There's still some hope. But you really want to win at least 16 road games, because of the 24 playoff teams that won fewer than 16 road games in the regular season, only three of those 24 made it out of the first round, and all three of those lost in the second round. The worst road record for a playoff team in the last 20 years was 12-29, a record shared by the We Believe Warriors in 2007 and the much less memorable 2008 Atlanta Hawks. Don't really have any thoughts about them. So what does this all mean? Well, first, leaving aside the Warriors for a second, if you're a fan of a playoff team that is hoping to make some noise in the playoffs, you really want to get to 16 road wins. So for instance, if you're the Cavs, if you're a Cavs fan, if you're a Heat fan, that means going at least 2-6 in your remaining road games, because both of those teams currently have 14 road wins. If you're a Mavericks fan, that means going at least 4-5 in your remaining road games to get to that 16 win number. And for Grizzlies fans like us, that means going 500 in your remaining road games, because they currently only have 12 road wins.
Wow.
But what about the Warriors? Well, first of all, even if the Warriors won all eight of their remaining road games, that would only get them to 15 road wins. No playoff team with 15 or fewer road wins in the last two decades has gotten past the second round, and only three of the 24 have made it past the first round. But beyond that, let's assume the Warriors actually make the playoffs. They need to go at least 5-3 in their final eight road games to avoid having the worst road record of any playoff team in the last 20 years.
Wow.
Listen, I know it's nearly impossible to write off this Warriors team. It feels wrong, and you don't have to do it. I'm not asking you.
I tried to do it last week.
Yeah, but a lot of people have tried, and then you see them play a good game, and you're like, maybe they'll be fine. I'm not asking you to write them off, but I do think it's worth putting into perspective just how unique it would be historically if this team does end up having success in this year's playoff, because the Warriors on the road this season are terrible. They're like the worst. I mean, I'm assuming they're going to make the playoffs. Maybe they won't, but I'm assuming they're going to make the playoffs. That will be the worst road record of any team. Any team. Think of all the bad teams that have made the playoffs in the East, you know, during the 2000s.
Yeah.
This would be the worst road record of any of those teams.
Yeah, that pretty is amazing. Wild. The Warriors at home this year,
they're incredible.
The third ranked defense in the league, 108.1. Only teams that are better are our Memphis Grizzlies and the Cleveland Cavaliers. On the road, do you know what they are this year?
Their defense? Is it like down? Is it like bottom 10?
They're 28th.
That's wild.
An 11-point difference between the road and home. 119.3. 28th. The only teams that are worse on the road than them are the Spurs and the Rockets. Those are the only two teams that are worse than them on the road. On the road, Detroit, better. Indiana, better. Dallas, better. Portland, who's just been horrible on defense, better. I mean, that is really atrocious.
It's amazing. And like, if you look at lineup data, you know, the Warriors starting unit is still far and away the best five-man lineup.
Sure.
Like, that's always going to exist. You can look at their home record. They're 27-7. Like, there are still so many reasons that make it hard to be completely out on this team, especially if, like, in your head you're thinking, okay, they're going to get Wiggins back. GP2 is going to come back for the playoffs. Like, everything's just going to fall into place. Maybe it will. But if it does fall into place, we'll look back on this season as, like, a historical anomaly if they are successful in the playoffs.
Yeah. Speaking of historical anomalies, we're about to talk about the Memphis Grizzlies right after this quick break.
All right, Andrew, it is time for the Wheel of Fandom, our weekly segment where we spin a digital wheel, it lands on a team, and we become fans of that team for a week. And this week, the Wheel of Fandom landed on the Memphis Grizzlies. That's right, the wheel physically landed on the Grizzlies and crushed them. In no particular order, here's a list of things that happened to the Grizzlies this week. Dylan Brooks got his 16th technical of the season, forcing him to miss a game. Brandon Clark tore his Achilles tendon, ending his season and likely a large chunk of next season. Steven Adams missed his 19th consecutive game, and instead of good news about his imminent return, we learned that he would be out for at least another 4 weeks following a stem cell injection in his knee. And then Grizzlies star Ja Morant streamed a video from a Colorado establishment called Shotgun Willie's where he appeared to flash a gun. The video led to Morant stepping away from the team. Initially, it was reported that Ja would miss 2 games. A subsequent report said they would be at least an additional 4 games. Meanwhile, on the court, the Grizzlies went 1-3 this week, but ended the week on a nice note with a 21-point home win over the Golden State Warriors. The Grizz are 39-26, third in the West per cleaning the glass. They are 10th in offense, 2nd in defense. Andrew, if the Grizzlies are our favorite team, who is our guest?
Oh, no. Oh, Keith. Keith Parrish from Fast Break Breakfast, the Daily Ding, and also the Grits and Grinds podcast. It's a podcast about the Memphis Grizzlies. Keith, are you okay?
Thank you for asking, Andrew. Before I answer, I would just like to say, screw you, Wheel of Fandom! You shouldn't play with fate, guys. Haven't we learned? You don't leave anything up to fate. I'm doing as well as can be considered. I mean, you didn't even highlight the painful manner in which these 3 losses went down. Like, it's not just the Grizzlies 1-3.
All these
like
fourth quarter leads.
They had spectacular fourth quarter losses. You can cherry pick a stat, which I did. If you highlight the specific time frames in the fourth quarters of the 3 losses, they were outscored 70-17 over like a 22-minute span. I'm taking exactly 7.5 minutes of each fourth quarter. No. It was like 24-2 against the Clippers. I can't remember what the Nuggets exact was. I mean, yeah, the Nuggets had like a 16-0 fourth quarter run. The Lakers outscored the Grizzlies 24-9 to end the game. You know, everything was terrible. I blacked out briefly when Ox was listing all the terrible things. Did you also say that Draymond Green released a very painful podcast?
Don't worry.
It was just like,
I just
cut
about
to
that.
The quick of like, everyone's like, if the Grizzlies had not won against the Warriors on Thursday, like I just released a Grits and Grinds episode where it was basically like, if we hadn't won that game, just like Dylan Brooks, just like, can he show back up to work too? Are we going to be missing 2 guys who have to lead the team? Like, it was, but luckily they did, and we're not as at the nadir. I recorded an episode. You guys will appreciate this. I recorded an episode yesterday before the Warriors game.
Yeah.
That I didn't release. I was like, you know what? It's just because I was like, you guys remember when like 4 days ago, I was like, hey, this is the nadir.
Yeah, right? I know.
Things aren't great. It's going to get better. And then I was like, emergency podcast update. This is the nadir.
I don't think
it's going to get worse.
A day later, and I was like, oh no, Keith. Oh,
yeah.
No. He's so hopeful. It's so
sad.
Yeah.
I mean, like again, I didn't even release like the next follow-up to that one where it's like, this is, you can't, because like there's no, I know we're getting into it now, like there's no silver lining to Brandon Clark being out for 12 months. Like there's been years. I'm not ever asking for someone to get injured, but there's been other years where, like, when someone gets in foul trouble, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is, we get to play Brandon Clark now.
Right.
You know, right. Exactly. Like there's been times where I'm like, you know what? I would rather close some games with this guy over Jonas Valanciunas or whoever it was in Grizzlies games past. There's no upside. Like, there's no, like, oh, now we get to play what? Like, I guess we can develop Roddy Moore. Like, no, we wanted to win a title. Yeah. We thought we were one of the best title contenders like a month and a half ago. And it's like, everything's dead. So circling back, screw you, Wheel of Fandom.
Let's start with Ja. It's not been a good week for Grizzly star Ja Morant. There's been a series of troubling stories going back to last summer that seemed to come to a breaking point this week, leading to his absence from the team. Considering everything that's happened this week, what is the current mindset of the fan base? Has this week shaken your belief in the future of this team, or are you viewing this as more of like a blip?
I think it's so bizarre. The story is so bizarre and unexpected, where it's hard as a fan to be like, even comprehend it. Because I think the entire fan base, if you ask them, is Ja Morant going to play again this season? We're all saying, well, yeah. Because I can't think of a time where a guy who was an all-star and leading a team that was going to have home court advantage in the playoffs had like an off-the-court thing and then took time away. And, of course, there's so many questions we don't know about like what is actually going on behind the scenes as far as like the team instigated him probably leaving as like a form of punishment, although it specifically is not a punishment. And then what's the league going to do? So like the mindset of the fan base is kind of like, I don't know, we're probably still in a denial and confusion and a blind optimism phase of like, you know, he's going to come back, but we don't actually know if he's going to come back. As far as like affecting the long-term outlook for the Grizzlies, I guess personally it hasn't for me. I mean, like, The loss of Brandon Clark next year, like that's a long-term outlook type thing. But it's specifically with Ja Morant and the core of having Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant, all of whom are incredible, all of whom are still extremely young. I don't think it is like a long-term detractor or like it's not taking away our hope for like what could be with this core.
Yeah, you just like won't let yourself go there yet.
Yeah, it's just like I don't know what to, again, I mean, it's like unprecedented to be like,
yeah.
I mean, there's been NBA players who have gotten in trouble legally, and there's been NBA players who have done things they shouldn't have done with firearms and been punished by the league. But they're, you know, like the Gilbert Arenas thing that everyone keeps comparing or like throwing out or incorrectly being like a 50-game suspension. You're like, what? The Gilbert Arenas thing is way different than what Ja Morant thing is. So we're still like, I guess we're also thinking like, well, he's going to come back at some point, even if the league does do something. Like, we're assuming he's going to be back this season just because we don't know. We don't know specifically what Ja's going through and, you know, what his mental health is like and where he's going to be prepared to play basketball or when he's going to be prepared to play basketball. And then once he is officially, like, I'm good enough to play, then will there still be punishment or suspension? And so, yeah, who knows?
So you mentioned this earlier. This was a big week for fans of Dillon Brooks, Draymond Green beef because after Brooks expressed his dislike of Draymond and the Warriors, Draymond responded saying, among other things, if you ever wondered why Memphis is not ready to compete for a championship, look no further than this idiot right here. They're actually depending on this guy to help them win a championship. And he says his game is cool. Quite frankly, that just shows how little you know about basketball. And yet you're running around talking about dynasty. The dynasty starts after you. Not with you. Keith, do you think there is a kernel of truth in what Draymond said about Brooks, or do you think most Grizz fans consider Brooks a locked-in piece of this Grizzlies core moving forward and that they should pay this summer, like absolutely pay this summer?
To answer the second part of the question, no, there isn't a consensus or a majority of, I think, Grizzlies fans who are like, oh yeah, this is, you know, Dillon Brooks is definitely a piece. He's become... This season, he's become more of an acquired taste even than he was in previous seasons. I don't know what you want to call it. He's been shooting terribly. And he has loud, bad games, you know, where he breaks a lot of shots. And he's a very inefficient player. But I've always maintained, like, he's an important piece to what the Grizzlies do. And you see it in the game on Thursday night against the Warriors. He guards Steph Curry. And then he also... At times, he'll have to guard Like, he guarded Carl Anthony Towns in the series against the Timberwolves last year. And he guards Zion Williamson particularly kind of well. And he can guard everyone. He guards 1 through 4. He guards the best player every single night on the other team. And most Grizzlies fans have trouble accepting this. Like, he's right now playing a career high in minutes, but he's averaging the fewest shot attempts per game since his second season. And, like, it's one of those things where, like, he's shooting less and less, but, of course, he's also thrust himself into national prominence even more,
right?
With his comments, and the Grizzlies just love, they've been given exposure this year, and maybe just the novelty of, like, hey, ESPN wants to cover us, why don't I give them a juicy quote? And so, like, yeah. Dylan's always been off kilter and hilarious with the things he says, and with no self-awareness about many of the things he says. But, like, that's something we normally love about NBA players.
You know, right.
Like, what in the world is he talking about? To answer the first part of your question, is there a kernel of truth in what Draymond said? Certainly. Yeah, there is. I do think he's important to the Grizzlies. I don't think he's like, I'm not in the you can't win with Dylan Brooks camp. Like, the Grizzlies have been quite good with Dylan. They've been notably better with him on the court every single year he's been on the Grizzlies, at least for the past 4, I think. Like, they've been way better when he's on the court. And so I think having that guy who can guard the other team's best player and then provide offense if needed sometimes. I mean, usually you hope it's better than this. Also, Draymond, I mean, you didn't say the quotes. He said lots of things that are flatly not true about himself particularly. Like, after the game against the Grizzlies on Thursday, Draymond's like, yeah, the difference between me and Dylan is I only get technicals when I want to.
Yeah.
Yeah? You think that's true? Also, Dylan correctly pointed out, like Draymond accused Dylan of Dylan's teammates not enjoying playing with him, which, again, I don't know any fact to that. Also, like Dylan correctly pointed out, I don't get in physical altercations with my teammates, which is, again... It's a fair point, Dylan. Score one for Dylan. I mean, I know the Warriors specifically don't like Dylan Brooks.
Yeah.
Like, actually, Andrew, you were there last summer. We were together, and I talked to Andre Iguodala, and he said similar things to what Draymond Green said. Like, Dylan Brooks is holding you back. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the reason, you know, that the Warriors aren't that good. But, I mean, the Grizzlies aren't, you know, like a contender in the Warriors people's minds. But, like, for me, most of that goes just back to a distaste that this team clearly does not like Dylan Brooks. By the way, Andre Iguodala has not beaten the Memphis Grizzlies since he was on the Memphis Grizzlies. Wow. He's 0-3 in games that Iguodala has played.
Interesting.
Dylan Brooks averages 21 points in those games against Andre Iguodala.
In your face, Andre.
Also interesting is that looking at the current standings, Memphis is in third and Golden State is currently in sixth. Who knows how it'll end up, but that would be fun.
Well, the NBA is scripted, so that's what we're going to get.
Assuming the Grizzlies do keep Brooks this summer, do you have in your mind like a expectation for what his contract number will be? Because I just like can't figure out what Dylan Brooks' next contract will look like.
I mean, when you see what the Joe Harris's, Duncan Robinson's, Kelly Oubre's of the world get paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's going to be more than that. I believe his extension number was basically they could sign him for like $15 million a year, and like there's no way he's taking that. I mean, if he ends the year still basically shooting 37% or whatever, maybe that'll really tank his market. But like, I just think wings who can play, who can defend, make, you know, $20 million a year, basically, like the Keldon Johnson extension type things, and DeAndre Hunter's of the world, the Bogdanovich's. It's like Dylan provides a value, and if I'm a Grizzlies fan, I'd be like thrilled if he somehow played so poorly that he like got himself locked into what his extension number would be.
Right.
Like, I just think with, you know, and the cap keeps going up, but like starters and guys who can defend, you know, wings with some size, which he has, like they make $20 million a year basically as a starting point. When you see like what offense only sixth men, like your Jordan Poole's, when they're getting $30 million a year, or Tyler Hero's $30 million a year. I mean, it's, I guess if you pulled a lot of NBA fans and players, like they might value the offensive creation of those type players way more than just a scrappy, inefficient defender type. But I don't know. I would kind of guess NBA front offices value those somewhat similarly. I don't think Dylan's getting $30 million a year, but like, you know, I think anything around $20 million per year is just what a team's going to pay for a guy who can be in like your top seven of your rotation and guard the NBA's best players on a night-to-night basis.
So we mentioned Brandon Clark. He tore his Achilles this week and will miss the rest of the season and likely a big chunk of next. For those who don't watch Memphis regularly, can you explain why Brandon Clark's loss is so important to this team going forward?
Yeah, for me, and this might be a minority opinion, but for me, Brandon Clark is part of the Grizzlies' ceiling, as in their ideal best fit is not necessarily with Steven Adams in there. They've been great with Steven Adams on the court the last couple of years, but you saw it in the postseason last year. When everyone was fully healthy, they voluntarily would use Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. as like the front court pairing to close games with. The lineup data, whenever Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. play together, has always been incredible. They're like this perfect pairing where they can both guard on the perimeter. One of the limitations with Steven Adams, like, you know, he can't switch and you basically have to do drop defense. And like Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. are so versatile and are so good at guarding on the perimeter that like that front court thing was this like elite key they could go to. It was their death lineup of things that like other teams can't handle this. And also just losing Brandon Clark, if you do want to change up your strategy like they did in the first round series against the Timberwolves last year, where they said, like, you know what, we're not going to play Steven Adams. We're going to try something different. And in that series, Brandon Clark averaged over 16 points per game and over 9 rebounds per game, and the Grizzlies probably do not beat the Timberwolves if Brandon Clark is not there. The Timberwolves also probably don't trade for Rudy Gobert if Brandon Clark doesn't absolutely wreck them in the postseason last year on the offensive glass. And so not having that, all of a sudden you've lost, like, oh, we have one fewer avenues to victory. Like, we now have to have Steven Adams. And now with this news of Steven Adams and his knee, we don't know what's going on. Like, oh, well, now the Grizzlies have lost all their above-average rebounders for their position. And they've also lost one of their only, you know, guys who is an efficient scorer. Yeah, he's not a shooter, but, like, makes 67% of his shots, and he's this vertical threat. You lost one of your only vertical threat guys on the team. So it's like you've lost – I think you've become easier to scheme against because there are fewer things that the Grizzlies can now throw at their opponent. And it's basically, I think most teams are going to say, well, this is what we're going to face. It's going to be Steven Adams or Xavier Tillman. It's two relatively similar in what they do. Big men, they no longer have the option of unlocking this like absolutely elite defensive front court that also, by the way, smokes team on offense because of the perfect pairing. So that's why I think, again, the Brandon Clark loss, you're like, hey, it's a guy who plays 19, 20 minutes a game. But for me, it's a huge blow. It like if none of this stuff was happening with Ja Morant, if Steven Adams was totally healthy, I think it's like a big-time reduction in the chances the Grizzlies could win multiple series in the playoffs.
So I wanted to ask you about some of their young guys, because last summer they drafted four players, Jake Laravia, David Roddy, Kennedy Chandler, and Vince Williams Jr. Also added rookie Kenneth Lofton Jr. as a two-way guy. All these players were Twitter draft darlings, but I'm interested in where Grizzlies fans stand on this rookie class now. How would you rank them in terms of your belief in them being a part of this Grizzlies future?
I mean, I can't speak for other Grizzlies fans. It's been a weird adjustment period to basically, I still haven't gotten over it, kind of, that they added so many rookies to the squad this year, where it's like we won 56 games last year. We took the Warriors to 6 games, and we were ahead in 3 of the fourth quarters of the games we lost. Like, we're on the precipice. We have this very young team, and we think Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane are all going to get better. And, like, this year specifically, Jaren Jackson Jr. has taken a big leap forward, and Desmond Bane has taken a big leap forward. And the response of the front office to be like, hey, what if we also develop 5 guys while we're doing this? It's like, oh, that's bold. So, like, I like what Roddy has done at times this year. And so, like, could he be part of the Grizzlies dynasty that starts maybe after Dylan Brooks leaves, as Draymond alludes to? Yeah, maybe. But, like, none of the rookies have done anything where you're like, oh, that guy's a keeper. Or, like, oh, that guy's going to be better than the guy we got rid of.
Yeah.
You know? Like, so it's hard to say. I'm not like super fired up, especially now that you've lost 2 players to injury and Ja Morant's away from the team. Where if you're using what 20% of your guaranteed salaries on players who you don't think are going to help you in the regular season, and then you lose 2 other players, it's now like, what are we doing here? And by the way, our two-way spots, which have been this, you know, avenue that teams can get help, can get some regular season help. They don't even play their two-way guys in, mm-hmm. in Vince Williams and Kenneth Lofton Jr. Those guys don't play regular minutes. So it's been a very strange, quizzical, like, I know you guys hit home runs front office constantly in the draft, and like you discover guys through your two-way contracts. Like you discovered John Conchar, and like not that long ago, like Yuta Watanabe was a two-way player, and he's like, these are useful NBA players. So you're good at finding useful NBA players, but also this dual paths of compete for a title and develop. I think we need to start leaning more into the compete for a title. So yeah, I'm like the rookie class. It's interesting that they've gone for that. If any of them is that long-winded monologue I just went on to explain my feelings towards them, it's complicated. Where I'm like, they seem, I'm not done with any of them. Where I'm like, Laravia has shown stuff. He doesn't play much anymore. I mean, Kennedy Chandler, he's an undersized athletic point guard. It's like, we have, that's what our star is. Why are we, he's like 2 years younger or 3 years younger than John Morant, I think technically. But it's like, John Morant's going to be here for 10 years, we think. So I have very mixed negative feelings about the rookie class. It's not their fault. I want to tell the rookies it's not their fault. It's where we were as a team and my attachment to some of the players we got rid of.
Yeah. The thing I know about Keith is a man of the present. He's not a man of the future.
I have a hard time. That's my own fault. Like, I didn't see Desmond Bane getting this good. I would have traded him for Bradley Beal 2 years ago. That's on me.
Yeah.
Okay? That's on me. I was wrong there.
Hey, it's okay. It's okay. Yeah. Okay, last question. Mm-hmm. Let's end with something that may or may not be positive. So with many guys out, there's going to be some opportunities for other Grizzlies players to get some playing time. Is there a player or two that you think could have like a mini breakout session during this period of time?
I mean, the answer's got to be Santi Aldama. I mean, that's the only, earlier I said there's no silver lining, and I truly feel that way. There's no like, oh, let Roddy and Laravia cook. Santi Aldama has had a pretty nice season. He's developing very, very nicely. He's shown a lot of promise as far as like a hybrid 4/3. His shooting has been really, really good. He has some like fun flair. He dunks the ball backwards a lot. He's a lot of reverse jams, which is just, again, it's good having the flair.
It's fun.
You know, it's fun. So like he is going to be like, he's going to be featured out of necessity. He's now the third big man, and we only have three guys who are tall on the whole team. And so he's going to play a lot, and he's shown a lot already this season. So the idea of like, I mean, like, I wish we didn't have to depend on him is kind of where I'm at, because they do. But one thing that I think it will be fun, we'll be seeing Santi be given the freedom to play 25, 27, 28 minutes every single night, and to see if he keeps living up to the moment. Because so far he has. He really has seized the opportunity given to him this season, and he's been a bright spot for the Grizzlies this year.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Well, Keith, thank you so much for answering all of our Grizzlies questions on a tough week. It is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat Grizz Edition. Now, every week we play Andrew versus the Beat. It's a trivia show where Andrew goes head-to-head with a beat writer, or in this case, Keith Parrish, host of the Grits and Grinds podcast. Now, Keith, you've played this before. You know how it works. Eight questions, all about the Grizz. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 8. It'll correspond to a question. Maybe easy, maybe hard. If you get it right, you'll get at least 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for one. We'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. So all I need from you is a number between 1 and 8.
Both 5.
Question number 5. Ja Morant has had 53 career 30-point games, which is a franchise record. In fact, the next closest Grizzly in franchise history only had 25 30-point games. Who is that Grizzly?
Wow. I'm going to say Sharif Abdul-Rahim.
Sharif Abdul-Rahim. That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Oh, boy. Gosh. Z-Bo?
Andrew? That is also incorrect. Although, now that Keith said Sharif Abdul-Rahim, I am wondering whether the stat head filter is only picking up Memphis Grizzlies and not Vancouver Grizzlies.
I think it should include the Vancouver.
It should? Okay. Because the answer was Rudy Gay, who had 25. Mm. And Mike Conley had 24. So, but I'm going to look that up as we're going on. So I will get back to you. Andrew, you have control of the board.
Number one.
Oh, question number one, a fun one. Per Cleaning the Glass, the last time Memphis had an above average half court offense was the 2014-15 season.
Wow.
14 players played at least 1 minute in the playoffs for that Grizzlies team, and we're going to try to name them all. So how this works, Andrew, you're going to give me a name, then Keith will give me a name. We'll go back and forth until one of you stumbles. So these are players who played for the Grizzlies in the 2015 playoffs.
Tony Allen.
That is correct. Keith.
All right. Marc Gasol.
That is correct, Andrew.
Z-Bo.
That is correct, Keith.
Mike Conley.
Great. You've gotten all the easy ones. Keep going, Andrew.
I think Jeff Green was on that team.
He was, Andrew. Keith?
Let's go with... trying to leave some for Andrew so we can accomplish this feat.
Oh, wow. He's taunting you, Andrew.
No,
he knows them all. He's...
No, I don't. Like, honestly, I'm trying to remember, like, all right, which was the one where so-and-so got suspended? I don't want to fall on my face. Let's do Kosta Kufos.
Kosta Kufos. That is correct, Andrew.
What about Courtney Lee?
Courtney Lee, another good one. That is also correct. Back to Keith.
Let's do Nick Calathes.
Nick Calathes is correct. Andrew, what do you got? Andrew, there's only 6 names to go. Got an 8 of the 14.
Was John the tackle box lure on this team?
Woo! Yes, he was, Andrew. Back to Keith.
All right.
Still follow John Lure on Instagram for some reason.
Why?
Just, I don't have no idea.
Fourteen, 15.
That's right.
Vince Carter.
Yes, you got it, Keith. Oh, back to Andrew.
I had to make sure I got my years right. I was like, all right.
Oh my gosh. Vince Carter. Goodness, I can't remember if this guy was on this team. I don't think he was. Tayshaun Prince, was he on that team?
Tayshaun Prince? Andrew, he was not on that team, which means Keith
was part of the Jeff Green trade.
He's part of the Jeff Green trade. See, that's why I felt so uneasy. Andrew. I knew that he left the team at some point.
Keith, do you want to show off any other names you just want to throw out there?
Beno Udrah.
Yeah, correct. Three more.
Beans.
Three more. I'm trying to think. Are we still...
One was a guy who played in the game just last night on Thursday night.
Oh, Jermichael Green.
Oh, Jermichael Green. Jermichael Green. That's funny. I've actually erased the Jermichael Green memory of that. Yeah, he played a lot back then.
The Jay Green thing going on that season with the box scores.
Yeah, yeah. We had they reunited on the Nuggets, the Jay Greens, I believe.
Yep.
The only other two names, one, a guy I was kind of hyped for in the draft, Jordan Adams, and then Russ Smith. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm glad I stopped talking because I would have struck out on trying to remember Russ Smith and Jordan Adams.
Russ Smith. Wow.
All right, Keith, you've got the lead and you have control of the board.
Number two.
Five different rookies have gotten NBA minutes for the Grizzlies this season. There are only two other teams in the league this season that have given minutes to five different rookies. Who are those teams? And you get 1 point per correct answer.
Wait, how many other teams are
there? There's only two other teams that have played five different rookies this season.
Wow.
My first guess will be the Rockets.
That is correct. The Houston Rockets. Darius Daige, Trevor Hudgens, Ty Washington Jr., Jabari Smith Jr., and Tari Eason.
Did you make up those first two names?
Wow.
Darius Daige, Trevor Hudgens. I did not.
Okay. All right. Take your word for it. Let's go with I don't know. I'll say Thunder.
The Thunder. That is incorrect. Andrew, who is the only other team to play five different rookies NBA minutes this season?
Five is a lot. Goodness. Indy? I don't know.
Indy, good guess, but it's incorrect. It is the San Antonio Spurs. Oh, Jeremy Sochan, Malachi Branham, Blake Wesley, Dom Barlow, and Julian Champagne.
Oh, boy. All right.
All right. That Keith is up count. 2-0. Andrew, you have control of the board.
All right. Question number three.
I don't know if this one's easy or hard. Well, actually, I know it's not easy. Okay. Steven Adams currently has an offensive rebound percentage of 19.7%, meaning he grabs nearly 20% of all available offensive rebounds when he is on the court. The last time someone played as many minutes per game as Adams and had an offensive rebound percentage higher than 19% was in the 1997-98 season when this player, who made his only All-Star appearance, accomplished that feat. Who is the player?
Oh, my gosh.
So you know he was an All-Star in the 97-98 season. That was the only one time he made it. One-time All-Star.
97-98. Fifth grade.
yeah, narrow it down for what grade you were in. That'll be helpful.
Oh, boy. Charles Oakley? I have no clue.
Before I give you the answer...
Yeah.
I have rerun my analysis of 30-point games in Grizzlies history.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ja Morant is still number one, 53. Uh-huh. Number two, Sharif Abdul-Rahim with 34, which means Keith gets a retroactive 2 points.
I need this this week.
So now Keith is
they
up
went
four.
Went back to Secaucus, and they changed that to three.
Wow.
And bad news for you, Andrew, whatever you just said, wrong. That was incorrect. So, Keith, you have a chance to steal another point here. Go up to a commanding 5-0 lead.
Did Antonio Davis or, wait, was it Dale Davis? Did one of those guys make an All-Star game once? I'm going to go with either Antonio or Dale Davis.
You know what? I'll give you both of the Davises because neither of them is correct. It was actually Jason Williams.
Not white chocolate. The accidentally shot my limo driver.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's a hard question.
That was a good question. Wow.
okay. Keith, you have control of the board and a commanding lead.
I'll go with number eight. Boy,
question good. Number eight. Jaren Jackson Jr. currently averaging 1.5 threes per game and 3.2 blocks. There is only one other player in NBA history to average at least one 3-pointer and 3 blocks per game for an entire season. Who was it?
Rafe LaFrentz.
That is incorrect.
Thought I'd Andrew, try to say it confidently.
You said it so confidently that I started to search for Rafe LaFrentz on Basketball Reference.
Yeah.
What's the stat again? Three blocks?
For an entire season.
Yeah.
This player hit at least one 3 per game,
mm-hmm.
and got 3 blocks per game. Now, Keith, I am looking it up right now. Rafe LaFrentz did do it in Denver, but he was traded that season to Dallas. So his total stats for that season, he did not do it. But wow. Very good guess. Very good guess.
I should have specified.
Manute Bol?
Manute Bol. No, it's someone much more recent. It was just a couple seasons ago. It was Miles Turner.
Oh, wow.
Oh, durr.
Only other one to do it. All right, Andrew, you got to start making up ground now.
This is not good. Number four.
Question number four. Ooh, I don't know if this will be the one. Several Grizzlies players have official nicknames listed on basketballreference.com.
Boy.
Which of the following is not an official nickname for a Grizzly player? I'm going to give you five nicknames. Four of them appear on Basketball Reference. One does not. They are Brandroid, Big Body Roddy, Jitty, Duck, G12. Again, that is Brandroid, Big Body Roddy, Jitty, Duck, G12.
Brandroid.
I'll
say Brandroid. I just can't imagine that's a nickname of anybody.
Okay, fine. All right. I guess it wasn't that hard. Yeah, it was Brandroid. That's not real.
I was like, I've never heard that. Wow.
I searched for Brandon Clark nicknames, and there was some Reddit thread, and the guy was like, Brandroid. We got to do Brandroid.
Wow.
Like, all right. That's good enough for me. Yeah. Okay, Keith, you still have the lead, but Andrew has halved it.
Yeah.
Two questions left.
Number six.
Question number six. What is Steven Adams's career high in points in a single game? Now, before you answer, you get to pick who answers first. So if you let Andrew answer first, you just have to go higher or lower, or you can pick first and he goes higher or lower. If either of you get it exactly, though, you get a bonus point. So a little danger in letting Andrew go first.
Well, yeah, so then Andrew could... right now I'm looking at worst-case scenario. It would be a tie,
I think. Yeah, it would be 4-4 going into the final if Andrew got it exactly right.
So I guess...
he would get his 1 point plus a bonus point.
Well, I guess, I mean, maybe there could be a bonus point on the next question, too.
Ooh, maybe. You never know.
I'll play it safe, and I'm going to say... also because Andrew, I mean, with the Thunder connection,
maybe that's true. Remembers.
Maybe he was there in the building. I'm gonna guess on the exact number.
Okay.
I'm gonna say 25 points.
25 points. Andrew, would you like to go higher or lower?
I'll say higher.
Going higher. Steven Adams, best game of his career. He scored 27 points, which is higher than 25. And that brings us to our final question.
Wow.
Andrew now down by one. And if you are a loyal listener and you heard when we had Pelicans Week, a question like this came up. If you look at the first and last names of all the players on the Grizzlies roster, Andrew, there are only three letters of the alphabet that do not appear in any Grizzlies player's name.
Okay.
What are those letters? Now, there's three. You could get 3 points here. So, for instance, just to help you out a little bit, Zaire Williams. Okay, that takes care of
Z.
So, it's not Z. But there are three letters in the alphabet that do not appear in any Grizzlies player's name.
Wow.
1 point per correct answer, Andrew.
See, they've got the ZYX. Guys,
that's why it's such a great question.
Which is
I love
one.
When teams have a Z guy and an X guy.
Golly, Al, this is so hard. I'm just going through the letters of the alphabet in my head.
So
you know?
Hard and so dumb.
Just thinking of
letters.
Is there an F guy? The Lofton? Yeah, there is. Oh boy, Al.
I can hear you stalling, Andrew.
Is there a G? Is there a G man?
Andrew, there is not a G man, which gets you a point. You are now even with Keith.
Okay.
Two letters remaining. Can you get one of those letters? Now, even if you get one of those letters and you miss the other one, Keith could still tie it up. So this is still anyone's game.
Is there a Q? I'm trying to think. Is there a Q?
Andrew? There is not a Q. That's another point you've pulled ahead of Keith. Now, you could win it all right here if you can give me the final letter that is not in any Grizzlies player's name. One remaining letter. If you get it wrong, Keith will have a chance to steal for 1 point, tie it up, which would send us into sudden death. Thinking of all those letters, 26 of them. You've narrowed it down pretty well, Andrew.
Is there you? Is there you? A you guy?
Andrew? There is a you guy. Dang Luke it. Kennard.
Oh,
which means Keith has a chance to steal for one, sending the game into overtime.
I'm running through them. Still running through them.
Referring to letters of the alphabet?
Yeah.
Yes,
I'm running through letters of the alphabet.
Yes, yes, yes.
It takes me a while.
There's a lot of them.
At least 26 seconds.
This is insane.
It is insane.
It's not insane. Totally valid question. Everyone knows the alphabet.
Maybe not everyone.
Maybe not. My son, he's only 10 months old, doesn't know it. Dummy.
Little dummy.
Yes, I keep thinking of letters, and they keep showing up.
Hey, we can edit a lot of this out, so take your time.
Oh, okay.
All think right. about it. I want you to feel confident in your answer.
Permitted. I mean, it's not cheating to write the names out, which I've done, right?
I suppose not. There are. I did not state any rules, so you're free to do whatever you want.
All right. Are we missing a P?
Keith? We are missing a P, which brings us to 5-5 sudden death question.
Oh, no.
All right, here we go. This is the final question. This will decide it all. Ja Morant has hit 1,163 career free throws, seventh in Grizzlies franchise history. We are going to name the other 9 players in the top 10 for most made free throws in Grizzlies franchise history. Vancouver wow. does count, to clarify. So we'll start with Keith. Keith, give me a name, someone who hit a lot of free throws.
Mike Conley.
That is correct. He was number 3. Andrew.
Zach Randolph.
That is correct. He was number 5. Back to Keith.
Rudy Gay.
Rudy Gay, number 6. Back to Andrew.
Pau Gasol.
Pau Gasol, number 2, Andrew. Back to Keith.
Mark Gasol.
Mark Gasol's number 1, 2,701. Andrew, there are 4 names left.
Sharif Abdul-Rahim, is he on the list?
Sharif Abdul-Rahim, is he on the list? Andrew, he is on the list at number 4, which wow. means number 8, number 9, and number 10 are still out there for Keith. Can he get one of them?
OJ Mayo?
OJ Mayo, is he in the top 10 of Grizzlies franchise history for most made free throws? He is not, which means Andrew wins the week. The other names, Stromile Swift, Bryant Big Country Reeves,
and really?
Hakeem Warrick.
Whoa! Those are some
Hakeem
names.
Warrick has more free throws than OJ Mayo? Blows my mind.
I feel confident on this one. I'm looking at the screen.
No, I believe you. I believe
you. 824.
Well, Keith, it just feels fitting that we ended Grizzlies week with another L.
Man,
boy,
pick it up that L.
Go listen to Grits and Grinds. It's a great podcast. I actually listen to it all the time. It's a great show. Keith does a great job. Listen to Fast Break Breakfast as well. Another great NBA show. Listen to Keith on the Daily Ding Recap every single Monday with Dave DeFore. It's very good. I enjoy all of Keith's podcasts, so you should too. Keith, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Andrew, that was Grizzlies week. It was a tough one. Let's hope that it's better for whoever the next team is going to be, and we still have a lot of teams to choose from. You know what? We still haven't gotten the Kings, Andrew. The Kings. This amazing season, the wheel has deprived us of the Kings this entire time.
Come
There's
on, wheel.
14 teams remaining. Let's spin the wheel and see who we get. Next week on the Wheel of Fandom, we will be talking about The Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors.
Oh, I feel like the wheel is primed to crush another team.
Yeah, it kind of is. The
Golden State Warriors. That'll be great. That'll be fun. I got to see them up close and personal this past week, which was a delight. So I'm excited to talk more Warriors.
Oh, my gosh. Andrew, second week in a row, every single game is on national TV. Against the Bucks on Saturday, against the Suns on Monday, at the Los Angeles Clippers on Wednesday on ESPN.
Wow, that's a great slate of games. This will be very exciting. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it on the show just like these. This one comes from Tina from Down Under in Australia. Good day from Sydney. The Saturday Slam and Jam is the perfect way to wrap up the week that was in the NBA. Fun, entertaining, and also thorough. A definite must listen each week. Jared, thanks so much for that review. This next one comes from, let's see. Oh, we've already read that one on the podcast. All right.
Okay. You should read the one from that seventh grader. Give us a 1-star review, but love the show.
Yeah, this one does come from JJ Money 830 says, exceptional 1-star. I'm only a seventh grader, but you guys make my Saturdays a whole lot more fun. My only suggestion is to keep doing what you do to make this world a better place. Thank you. He put 1-star, but I think he meant 5 stars. But if you did mean 1-star, please let me know why. I would love a further explanation of that. This next one comes from Gorilla Bucketing. 5 stars. Saturday Slam and Jam is the one-stop shop for NBA coverage for casuals and NBA heads alike. That said, I have some thoughts. Voters' focus on impact metrics means the Bucks win exactly 0 awards, and that's good news. Giannis isn't MVP because he's surrounded by great players and replaced by good players. Brook isn't DPOY because he just got one of the best point of attack defenders, Drew, and absolutely the best free safety, Giannis, both helping him and preventing the defense from falling off a cliff when he's resting. Bobby isn't sixth man of the year because he can't have an outstanding on-off differential when he's helping carry bench units and is compared to a strong starting lineup. Bud is not coach of the year because a team with this much talent should win 55 games. Horst isn't executive of the year because this group has been accumulated over a period of 10 years, including several key moves that preceded him, even if Crowder is the missing piece that unlocks the championship. This team is too good to win any awards because the best team is no longer the focal point of the awards. The marginal impact of each position is isolated and evaluated, and it's tough to see this team sinking if one of the pieces is removed. Hey, shouts.
Is that a Bucks fan?
This seems to be a Bucks fan. I'd be shocked if they're like, yeah, and I'm a Raptors fan, you know?
It's like, if this isn't a Bucks fan, they're like really into the Bucks, sort of.
Yeah, we got some big issues if this is not a Bucks fan. Yeah, shout out to the Bucks. They don't get enough coverage. And I feel you. I feel you on that. Last one comes from DeVrazo. 5 stars. Andrew and Alex, this might seem dramatic, but your show is something I really look forward to every week during a very difficult time in my life. Every time I hear the music and the signature, Andrew, what a week it was. It puts a smile on my face. Andrew versus the Beat is the best segment in sports podcasting. Thank you for your awesome work. Thanks so much for that review. And thanks so much for listening to the Saturday Slam and Jam. We will be back next week, so enjoy all of the basketball this week. Man, all the basketball has been so good. Like, seriously, take time to watch because the league is in such a good place. So please go watch basketball, and we'll talk to you guys again next week.